If you're like me, you'll remember it like anybody remembers any war. One big drag.
And it just worries me based on the guerrilla warfare that our soldiers are dealing with now.
These wars and the racism that feeds the machinery of war and empire building must be stopped.
You do cry, as I have cried many times since I was in Vietnam, for having committed so much harm from so much ignorance.
But the fact is that the people of Iraq got none of the above.
We don't even give them what the UN describes as occupation. They don't have safety. We're not even occupiers. We are just devastators.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch from Monday, August 25th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. A pair of car bombs ripped through lunchtime crowds in India's financial capital, Bombay, today, killing 44 people and wreaking havoc at a crowded jewelry market and a popular historic landmark. More than 150 people were wounded. Police were focusing their investigation on Muslim militant groups, but victims from the explosions were almost certain to include both Muslims and Hindus. Police said the bombs were hidden in the trunks of two taxis and exploded within 5 minutes of each other. Several people were being interrogated, including one taxi driver. No one immediately claimed responsibility for the bombings. The timing raised concerns the blast was linked to a dispute over a religious site in the northern city of Ayodhya, claimed by both Hindus and Muslims, that has been the source of much bloodshed in the past. The bombings came hours after the release of a long-awaited archaeological report on the site that itself showed divisions over the site's history. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said today that U.S. military commanders in Iraq will receive all of the troops they need to fight Saddam Hussein's supporters and other foes, regardless of the cost. He added, however, that General John Abizaid, head of U.S. Central Command, has not indicated that a larger American presence is required. He said the United States can afford whatever military force level is necessary and appropriate for our military security. He made those comments to several thousand delegates to the annual Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention. If Abizaid believes additional troops are needed, he said, he will have additional troops. Let there be no doubt about it. Earlier in the session, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry charged that the Bush administration has failed U.S. troops in Iraq while neglecting soldiers who served in past wars. Kerry, a veteran of the Vietnam War, said as president, he would get more allies involved in Iraq, improve pay for U.S. soldiers, and ensure veterans the benefits they were long ago promised. The International Red Cross has announced that it will pull most of its staff out of Iraq. It says it fears it may be the target of an attack like the one on the United Nations building in Baghdad, where a bomb killed at least 23 people last week. The BBC reports that other aid organizations are expected to follow. Earlier today, Free Speech Radio News Washington, D.C. correspondent Mitch Jesuit spoke by telephone with Phyllis Bennis, a fellow at the Institute of Policy Studies, about the Red Cross pullout and the task the United Nations has in dealing with the U.S. and Iraq.
I think the ICRC has recognized that because they are operating in an environment controlled by the U.S. occupation authorities, they're going to remain at risk. They're not pulling out altogether. They're pulling out the majority of their international staff. Local staff will remain and will continue to work. I think that this is a recognition that the challenges facing everyone trying to work in Iraq, whether it's humanitarian aid agencies, the United Nations, or others, are faced with the problem of being held accountable for the opposition that is growing in Iraq to the illegal U.S. occupation. In my view, this was the most likely target of the bombing of the UN headquarters at the Canal Hotel last week, in the same way that although the immediate target was the United Nations building, the real message was being sent to the U.S. and by proxy, essentially, anyone working under the auspices or under the authority of the United States, including American or British or Danish soldiers, Iraqi translators, and now the civilian staff of the United Nations, remains a target. That being said, I think the appropriate remedy is to end the U.S. occupation and to replace the U.S. occupation army with multilateral UN-led peacekeepers, Other countries, including India, France, Germany, Russia, have said they would be willing to send troops, but not under U.S. authority. The refusal of the U.S. to allow even sharing authority in Iraq, let alone the more appropriate way of the United Nations being in charge, is preventing other countries from being able to participate.
Do you think this is a critical time right now for the UN, almost similar to before the invasion of Iraq began? I was talking with Dennis Halliday earlier, yeah, saying that the UN right now really risks of going in there without more of a role in the reconstruction process of, you know, really losing its independence.
UN independence is a hard-fought-for commodity. And right now, there is enormous pressure on the United Nations, enormous pressure on the Secretary General from the United States, enormous pressure coming from every direction. This is, I think, as significant and as dramatic an attack on the United Nations, this physical attack, as was the political attack led by the United States when it went to war in defiance of UN refusal to give it permission in the run-up to the war. That was in the midst of an extraordinary 8.5-month-long period in which the United Nations was functioning as part of global civil society that was saying no to war. The UN throughout that period, including even the Security Council, despite the domination of the United States, was standing defiant of the U.S. calls for war and was refusing to endorse a U.S. invasion. In doing so, it was upholding the most important parts of the UN Charter that talks about ending the scourge of war, and it played an extraordinary role. That position came to an end when the UN, under enormous U.S. pressure, passed the resolution that essentially, after the fact, endorsed the U.S. and Britain as occupying powers in Iraq. That was the end of that period of the UN standing defiant. And right now, I know that there is a great deal of fear in the UN. This military attack in which UN humanitarian workers, UN staff, UN civilians paid the ultimate price for Washington's illegal occupation of Iraq is only the next installment, if you will, of this ongoing attack on the independence and capacity of the United Nations.
How important do you think it is that the United Nations takes some type of control or has a large influence in this reconstruction of Iraq? And then how important do you think it is for Iraqis?
I think that it's crucial that the UN, rather than the United States, be in control. The issue of rebuilding Iraq is as much a political question as it is a physical infrastructure question. And the political question, rebuilding the reality of the Iraqi state, requires legitimacy. That's why the issue of who constitutes the existing national council that the U.S. has established in Iraq is really not the right question. However representative it may or may not be, it doesn't matter because it doesn't have legitimacy since it was hand-chosen by the American occupation authorities. What's needed is a transparent and legitimate process in which Iraqis choose their own representation and not this kind of false claims that hand-picked Iraqis are legitimate because they may represent a wide range of Iraqi society. So control by the United Nations is crucial. For Iraqis themselves on the ground, what we're hearing is Iraqi voices saying over and over again that life is now worse in their country than it was before the war. Even though they are delighted that Saddam Hussein's regime is gone, their lives are worse. There is no water. There is no electricity. And most important of all, there is no security. Until those things are available to Iraqis, there is no way anyone can say that Iraqi lives are better off.
Phyllis Bennis is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. She spoke with Free Speech Radio News Washington, D.C. correspondent Mitch Jezerich. A coalition of more than 100 labor, peace, and human rights organizations, together with thousands of civil rights activists and concerned citizens, gathered on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial here in the nation's capital this weekend. They came to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the March on Washington, when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. They also spoke of the inevitable inequities that they feel still exist in such fields as criminal justice, political representation, and race relations. And several speakers made connections to the war and occupation of Iraq. Among them was Billy Tayac of the American Indian Movement.
You think in Iraq the war's for liberation, the war's for oil. I guarantee you I know what it is. They started here in the Chesapeake Bay, and 400 years they marched across our land, killing millions of people. We were people in the way. Now, people look at us as curios. People ask me, are you a foreigner? Hell no, I'm not a foreigner. I was born here, raised here. My ancestors are here. This is our land here. The check that you heard talked about by everybody here that bounced, the check that you heard people here say the president stopped payment on, those are our funds. That's whose funds they are. They stole our land, gold, and even tried to steal our souls. This is what it's about, plain and simple. We know who the real terrorist is. If you don't believe it, come out west to the Indian reservations. If you don't believe it, why don't you see millions of us walking down the streets? At the turn of the 20th century, in this land, there was only 245,000 survivors of invasion and taking of land. That's right. This is what it's about, plain and simple.
As we stand here today,
Leslie Kagan,
U.S.
of
troops are still occupying Iraq in the aftermath of an unjust, immoral, and illegal military invasion. The war against Iraq should never have happened. And I say to George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Colin Powell and Paul Wolfowitz and the rest of the warmongers, you were wrong and we were right. You are still wrong and we are still right. This occupation must end. Our service people are dying every day. They must be brought home, and the people of Iraq must be allowed to determine their own destiny. Today, instead of our money going into schools and healthcare and the other things our communities need, instead our money goes to help maintain the deadly Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories. Today, our tax dollars go to maintain U.S. military bases in every corner of the world. Earlier today, I walked around the area here, and I seemed at every turn to bump into another monument to war. It is horrible to see the numbers of U.S. service people killed in Korea and Vietnam and in other U.S. military actions. But I must tell you, it is horrifying to realize that there is not even one mention of the literally millions of civilians in those countries, millions of people of color who have died senseless, cruel deaths at the hands of the most powerful military force in human history. Those men who send our young, who are disproportionately youth of color, those men who send them to war do not even acknowledge the massive deaths of people who are not white. These wars and the racism that feeds the machinery of war and empire building must be stopped.
I'll never forget
James Zogby, president of the Arab American Institute,
and said, we're going to give the Iraqi people health care and their young people education. And he said, and we're going to give them all that is God's gifts. I said, try starting with us first, Mr. President. But the fact is that the people of Iraq got none of the above. The power's not on, the water's not running, food and health care are not there because we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. We don't need a new dream. We need to make the dream real and bring it forth to those in despair. A seed was planted here on this hallowed ground 40 years ago. It has grown. They've noted the diversity of this coalition, the many branches that have grown. The branches come back to their roots today to be renourished, to be given another chance to take the dream and make it real. I thank you for the opportunity to participate, to remind you that this dream is bigger, is more encompassing, and places more demands on us than sometimes we even imagine. The power of America doesn't come from our corporate greed or the barrels of our guns, but comes from the hearts of our people and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that are being gutted and destroyed by this administration. We don't need a new dream. We need to make the dream real, bring it forth, and end the despair that has captured so many here and abroad who looked for a different America, the America we promised them and that we so far have not made real.
Dunley Smith of Black Voices for Peace.
That would send its young men and women in uniform to occupy a country that never attacked us, and to do it on false pretenses, selling it on a pack of lies. They have lied to the American people. Our young people are being shot down like ducks every day. And when our young black men and women right here in America get brutalized by the police, this system does nothing for them. They don't deserve to be treated like that.
Speakers at this weekend's 40th anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington, making the link between civil rights issues and the war and occupation of Iraq. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. It's your financial support that makes this show possible. So if you're enjoying it, we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org. With opinion polls showing an increase in discontent among Americans over the Bush administration's handling of Iraq and the now seemingly endless occupation of that country, families of U.S. soldiers stationed there are beginning to speak out. This weekend, military families joined with peace activists in Crawford, Texas. They challenged Bush's message to bring them on with another message to bring them home. Stephen Ray has more from Crawford.
Several hundred demonstrators gathered in Crawford, Texas Saturday, not far from President Bush's ranch, for a Bring Them Home Now rally. Speaking out were mothers, grandmothers, wives, and children of U.S. soldiers stationed in Iraq and elsewhere in the Bush administration's war on terrorism. Saturday's rally was organized largely by Military Families Speak Out, a group that formed during the buildup for the U.S. war against Iraq. Candace Robeson lives in Crum, Texas, near Dallas. Her husband Mike is stationed in Iraq with the 489th Engineering Battalion. Candace spoke first on Saturday morning at the Crawford Peace House.
I'm here today to give military families across the state and the country a voice. George Bush does not support our soldiers. He has proven this time and again. He lies to our nation and our soldiers about our reasons for going to war. He makes thoughtless statements like bring them on to the Saddam loyalists who target our troops. He declared major combat over in Iraq while we still continue to lose one soldier a day. He continues to cut VA benefits, and as of October 1st, military families are facing a pay cut on our hazardous duty and separation allowance pays. He left military families out of his tax cut, and now new rules of engagement have come down for our soldiers. They are not to leave their bases locked and loaded, making them sitting ducks for the Iraqis that target them.
From speaking with her husband, Candace understands that many U.S. troops are questioning their mission.
So many of the guys have been there for so long, and then their tours have been extended for a year. Yeah, they're really wondering what they're doing there and, you know, what their real reasons for being there are.
Jerry Reed drove to Crawford from Norman, Oklahoma, where she's working on a PhD. She's from Chicago, as is her 21-year-old son, Cody, who is now serving in Iraq in the Army with V Corps as a communications specialist. She became involved with Military Families Speak Out before the U.S. war with Iraq.
He's been in Iraq since early March. I believe he got to Kuwait on March 4th. And he went into Iraq the first day that the Army invaded. He originally was assigned to an artillery unit, and he provided communications for them during the bombing phase of the war. Since then, he's now at Abu Ghraib prison, where he's providing communications for the MP unit that is in charge of that prison. He was there. The prison, as you probably know from news reports, was attacked by mortar last Saturday, and a Palestinian journalist that works with Reuters was shot in front of the prison, I guess by army personnel, I think Sunday or Monday. I'm able, because he's communications, I'm able to talk with him quite frequently. You know, he does sound well, but he almost sounds too well. I talked with him the morning after they were attacked by mortar, and he sounded too good for someone who had just experienced that.
At about 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, people marched from the Crawford Peace House down the main street and to the parking lot of the Crawford Football Stadium for an afternoon rally. Sharon Shirok is a West Point graduate. Her husband, Captain Joseph Shirok, is a lieutenant with the 4th Infantry Division based out of Fort Hood. She retired from the military recently due to an injury, but many of her friends are in the service. This was her first political rally.
When we first went into this, I was terrified that this would turn into another Vietnam War. I was a military history major at West Point, and my father was a Vietnam veteran. So I'm pretty familiar with how the social history went. You know, I got a personal view from my dad. And it just worries me based on the guerrilla warfare that our soldiers are dealing with now.
Like many of the military family members, Sharon says that her husband reports a drop in morale.
He doesn't really say that. He hasn't really mentioned that they've spoken about foreign policy per se. I know that morale is really low simply because we were initially told that they would be deployed 6 months to a year. And based on the quote-unquote success of how quickly we overthrew Saddam, there was a lot of word and speak that they would be home sooner rather than later. So when word finally came out that they would be extended a year, maybe even longer, that's when morale just went down the toilet.
Bring Them Home Now is a campaign of military families, veterans, active duty personnel, reservists, and others opposed to the ongoing war in Iraq. For more, go to www.bringthemhomenow.org. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Stefan Ray reporting from Crawford, Texas.
Last Friday, activists and anti-war organizers gathered on the lawn of the Westwood Federal Building in Los Angeles to say no to the occupations of Iraq, Afghanistan, and Palestine. Hundreds of people attended the event to hear speeches and music opposed to U.S. military intervention in the Middle East. They covered the lawns with tents, colorful signs, and banners that promoted peace and promoting the theme of occupying the occupiers. Sonali Kalhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles attended the event to listen and speak with people about their concerns regarding the continuing war in Iraq. We began this piece with a speech from anti-war organizer Sochi Johnson of the activist group Not in Our Name.
We've had to recognize that since September 11th, the kind of repression that's gone down in this country, the seeing of immigrants being rounded up, of Arabs and Muslims, of our South Asian brothers and sisters snatched out of their homes and out of their works, being rounded up and put in detention centers and deported, treating like animals, human beings who live in our communities and work and teach us and serve us and are collectively part of who we are, to see them isolated and chopped off from us, to see them go in and gut the Constitution, that they tried to scare us at every turn, that they brought out the police and the feds at every turn to try to scare us from marching. And a lot of us, we weren't prepared for the kind of repression that they brought down. We never thought we were going to live in a world that looked like Nazi Germany. But I have to say something else. I have to say that these people, these federal governments, the George Bushes and the Condoleezzas, the Colin Powells and the Dick Cheneys, they weren't prepared either for the resistance that we came out and mounted, not just in this country, but all around the world. They want us to crawl back in a hole, but we ain't crawling back in no hole. This war ain't over. This occupation ain't over. And we wonder what is going to happen in Iraq. What will happen in Baghdad and all the different villages and provinces? Will the people, after 11 years of sanctions, after watching their children die before their eyes rot away and waste away in hospitals, what will be the reaction from the people of Baghdad? 100 days later, the Iraqi people are fighting the occupation of the United States and the people of Iraq. They are fighting with their children. They are throwing stones and they are fighting back and they are marching in the streets against the most powerful army on the face of the world. And the people of Iraq have courage and they have sent a message to the people of this world that this shit ain't over. We're not going to stop fighting. government in our names, sends troops and soldiers in our names to shoot and kill and raid in our names, to drop bombs in our names, to occupy in our names, to round people up in our names, to gut civil rights in our name, to arrest Sherman Austin in our name, to try and convict Stephen Fulton, the GI resistor, in our name. As long as the U.S. government is doing this in our name, then we will fight back.
Sochi Johnson of Not In Our Name was followed by a report back from Jody Evans of Code Pink for Peace, which also sponsored the event.
I'm just so excited that you're out here and that Not In Our Name has created the space for us to come together, especially this week has just been so hard. It's cameramen, children, GI, the deaths of the innocents are piling up and piling up, and your hearts are just, they continue to break. Especially when Bush comes out and said, they're destroying the civilized world. And you want to say, look in the mirror. Who has destroyed the civilized world? When you're in Iraq, I mean, what happened this week? I felt it when I was there. It's just indescribable what it's like to be in Baghdad, what it's like to be there in February amongst people who've been suffering from sanctions for 12 years. Suffering, but finding a way to live their life. And now to go there and just find hell. To find women who literally don't care whether they continue to live because this is no longer life. It is hell. And we have created that. And it's just, we have to take the time to feel the heartbreak of that, to really feel it, to come together and share it, to feel that the innocence that is just constantly violated, to feel it together, and then to turn it around into the creative action, into the possibilities that we know we can live into. Not this disrespect we see. In the CPA, I can't tell you the level of disrespect I saw. It's kind of unfathomable that it exists, that they live inside, that they can even look at themselves in the mirror. They live inside Saddam's palace with all the amenities. They don't even go outside the walls. And inside the palace, they say, everything is fine out there. No, that's what they say. When you're outside the walls, they say it was better during the invasion. This is not life. They say we had one Saddam. Now we have 100 Saddams. From everywhere, they are being tortured and violated. What, this was supposed to help women? I mean, the level of violence against women right now, the rapes, the torture, it went from being a society where they had kind of freedoms that have been taken away constantly. I mean, those in education and those in medicine, it's being taken away. In the occupation, in the devastation, occupation, we don't even give them what the UN describes as occupation. They don't have safety. They don't have services. We're not even occupiers. We are just devastators.
My name is Henry Farber, and I'm a survivor of the Holocaust. As a survivor of the Holocaust, my opinion is, first of all, I see a parallel between the occupation of Iraq and the occupation of Palestine by the Israelis. You see, the both forces, the Israeli and the United States, are unwelcome guests. And when you have an unwelcome guest in your house, you do everything to get rid of him. And I find that both wars are illegal because in the Geneva Convention 1947, a war was declared illegal, especially if you attack somebody. War is only illegal if you are attacked by someone else as a self-defense mechanism.
Activists at last Friday's Occupy the Occupiers anti-war rally in Westford, California. Speaking with Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. Thanks to Fidel Rodriguez for production assistance with that piece.
Hi, I'm Lona Elias, the editor of Peace Watch. If you are enjoying this show, let me invite you to take a moment and make a donation to ensure that Peace Watch continues. You can make a secure online pledge of support by visiting our website at www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org. Or send us a check or money order to Peace Watch, 2390 Champlain Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. That's Peace Watch at 2390 Champlain Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We need your support, for it is your support that makes Peace Watch possible. Thank you.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.